Yeah. Thank you very much. Well, we are still tracking the story of Nehemiah, who was able to envision a better future for his people and then rally the help he needed to make it happen. Last week, we saw how Nehemiah prayed when he was overwhelmed, when life attacked him from all sides, even from within. This week, we are fast-forwarding a few years as the work on the wall continued. Last year, one of the hurricanes that battered the Texas coast pretty much wiped out the island where I used to live, Port Aransas. And my family has done a number of trips down there to help the recovery effort as much as they could. And my dad reported for those first trips, just after the hurricane had gone through, that there were a lot of people driving down to the island with their trucks full of water bottles. Not to give away, mind you, but to sell at a substantially increased rate. That is called profiteering, in case you're wondering. Now, of course, he said this while laughing, because what these people did not know is that the government had an entire parking lot filled with free water bottles for anyone on the island, so they lost money and were unable to sell. So they were foiled, and so he thought it was funny. But isn't that so human? Whenever there's a disaster, there's someone ready to make a profit off of it. Whenever there's suffering or trials or even just everyone's attention is focused elsewhere, someone is always asking, how can I make a quick buck off of this? The same was true during the rebuilding of the wall of Jerusalem in Nehemiah's time. The people were spending so much time out working on the wall that they didn't have time to do their normal jobs and make a living. And there were people there who were ready to give loans to these workers at excessive interest rates. Pretty soon, the work on the wall was actually grinding to a halt because of the financial situation of the workers on the wall. And so Nehemiah had to step in, break up the racket, and get everything humming along again. Now, in contrast to the profiteering of these moneylenders, we're going to skip over that part, and let's see, how did Nehemiah use his personal power and influence? Nehemiah chapter 5, starting with verse 14. From the time that I was appointed to be the governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allowance of the governor. The former governors who were before me laid heavy burdens on the people and took food and wine from them, besides 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants lorded it over the people. But I did not do so because of the fear of God. Indeed, I devoted myself to the work on this wall, acquired no land. All of my servants were gathered there for the work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 people, Jews and officials, besides those who came with us from the nations around us. Now that which was prepared for one day was an ox, 6 choice of sheep. Also fowls were prepared for me, every 10 days, skins of wine in abundance. Yet with all of this, I did not demand the food allowance of the governor because of the heavy burden of labor on the people. Remember for my good, O my God, all that I have done for this people. This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. Well, do you remember a few years ago, probably more than a few years ago now, there were some earthquakes in China and schools collapsed because of those earthquakes, and there were children trapped, some of them killed, in the rubble of their very own schools. It was tragic. Now, in the midst of that tragedy, one pastor told his congregation that he felt God had called him to send $1 million to help those families in the rebuilding. Quite a vision. And the response was huge. He told another pastor that I know that he had actually raised more than $3 million. So the pastor that I knew asked him, how he was going to, send the rest of that, if he had, other organizations in mind to help with the rebuilding. And he said, oh, no, God called me to send $1 million to China. The other $2 million was God blessing me for my faithfulness. If you just threw up a little in the back of your mouth, you're in good company. That feels icky, right? But why does that feel so icky? I mean, in other contexts, if you have more revenue than expenses, that's just called profit, right? Well, to me, I think it feels wrong because it feels a little dishonest. Because if someone, and not a little bit dishonest, totally dishonest, if someone sends money for China, it should go to China, right? Now, let's rewind to that Texas hurricane. One of the star players on the Houston Texans football team, J.J. Watt, set up an online fundraiser to help the city of Houston. And he couldn't get home because of the hurricane. And so from an impromptu hotel room in Dallas, he created this quick online fundraiser with the goal of raising $200,000 for hurricane relief, and shot a little video of himself in the hotel room to make it happen. 3 weeks later, he had raised $41 million. So God blessed him with $40,800,000, right? No, J.J. Watt kept expanding his effort to match the scale of the donations. And so now they've rebuilt 600 homes, 420 childcare centers, distributed 26 million meals, provided healthcare services to those in need, rebuilt Boys and Girls Clubs, and set up a 12-month continuing plan for food distribution. Reflecting back on it, J.J. Watt recently said, "As I reflect on the events of Hurricane Harvey 1 year ago, the memories of destruction and devastation remain, but they are accompanied by memories of hope, selflessness, and the beauty of the human spirit." That's not icky, that's inspiring, right? And so what's different about these two approaches? I mean, they both did send a lot of money to help people in need. But that pastor seems to have been looking out for ways to bless himself. And J.J. Watt seems to have been looking for ways to bless his city. Nehemiah says about his time as governor, "I devoted myself to the work on this wall. I acquired no land. All my servants were gathered for the work. And yet I did not demand the food allowance of the governor." That means he paid for all of those meals he talked about. He paid for that himself. He didn't take it from his taxes. So which does that sound like? Does that sound like the pastor keeping $2 million for himself? Or does that sound like J.J. Watt expanding the relief effort? Does that sound like someone who's in it for himself or in it for the cause? Does that feel icky or does that feel inspiring? Nehemiah gave up influence, gave up power, gave up money for the cause. And in fact, he invested his own money in the project rather than enriching himself. I had lunch with a church member last week. We were reflecting on some of the difficult times that we've had helping one of the very challenging people in our city. And the basic summary was sometimes doing the Lord's work can be annoying. Ever experienced that? But if we do it anyway, because it's the Lord's work, God notices. If we only serve when we feel good afterwards, that's like praying, "Dear God, I'll do whatever you want me to do, as long as it's fun and rewarding and interesting." Or maybe, heard this from another congregant as a joke, "God, please give me the chance to prove that winning the lottery won't spoil my heart." Just remember the organizations we talked about earlier, if that does happen. When you're thinking about serving somewhere, is it about you and your convenience? Is it about your reward? Is it about what you get out of it? Or is it about the cause? Is it about doing the work of the Lord? Now think about that for real. Jesus tells his followers that if they do these amazing spiritual things, but then they go telling everyone about it to gain admiration, well, that admiration is their reward. But if they're willing to serve without being noticed, God notices. And so is it about the cause? Or is it about me? We had our first movie night for the community this past Friday. The decorations are still up downstairs in Ficklin Hall. It's truly exceptional. Our children's director, Kate Ballard, put those together. You should, if you're not sticking around for the potluck, at least go see that. It's really fabulous down there. But the movie we watched was The Incredibles 2, and there's this funny exchange between the superhero dad and the superhero mom. And in the movie, superheroes are illegal. They're not allowed to use their powers. And so either the mom or the dad are going to have to go get a normal job instead of being superheroes. And the dad says, "We need to change that law so that I mean our kids, have a choice to use their superpowers." He was trying to pitch his wife to make it about the kids, but he slipped up and admitted it was about him. So when you do something nice for a friend, or a coworker or a neighbor? Is it about them or is it about you, wanting to be thanked or recognized in turn? If you serve at the community dinner or somewhere else in the church, is it about the cause or is it about getting recognized? When you donate to an organization or donate to this church, is it about getting what you want? You know, I get a vote for every dollar. Or is it about investing in the cause? It has been said that the Christian church is one of the only organizations on earth that exists primarily for the benefit of those who are not its members. There are a lot of organizations that are designed to benefit their own members, but Jesus gives us a different task, a different mission, a different goal. In our first text today, we heard Jesus give some rather direct teaching. He said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. No one can serve two masters, he says. Do not worry about your life. No one here has any troubles with that one, right? Worry won't add a single day to your life. Very direct, very challenging teachings. And later, Jesus ends it with this summary: strive first for the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these other things will be given to you as well. That is the paradox of our faith, that if you want to be respected, doing everything you can to gain respect won't gain you respect. Seeking God's purposes in God's righteousness, that's what makes you be respected. Doing everything in your power to gain recognition and affirmation won't leave you recognized and affirmed and fulfilled. Seeking God's purposes, God's causes, and God's ways, that's what will do that. Every church says they could use more members, right? But doing everything in our power to get more people won't actually bring more people. Seeking God's purposes, God's causes, and God's ways will do that. In one of the books I read recently, there's a guy who had his life really transformed by his local church. He visited one day, and his heart was so moved by the very personal follow-up response he got that he joined the church, he got involved. And in fact, he was invited to be on the evangelism committee, the committee that did the follow-up. And in his first meeting, they showed him the script that they use, the same script that they had used on him. And suddenly, he didn't feel like it was a very personal, thoughtful follow-up. It felt like a little trick to him. He felt like a statistic. It felt a little icky instead of inspiring. And so the call of Nehemiah and the call of Jesus today are really the same. What is God calling you to do to be faithful? What does faithfulness look like in your life? And whatever that looks like, whatever that faithfulness looks like, it may be affirming. It may not. It might gain you admiration and recognition of other people. It might not. It might come with certain perks, like Nehemiah's job. But in faithfulness, you have to decide if you take those perks or not. Faithfulness, it might lead to exciting things. Maybe not. In our faith, what we do and how we do it both matter. The end does not justify the means. So what does faithfulness look like for you? What does faithfulness look like in your life? Whatever that is, make sure you don't make it icky along the way. Amen.